Oral questions by members.
Member for Kamloops North Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The issue of anti-Semitism in this NDP caucus, party, cabinet and institutions goes to the core of the Premier's responsibilities. The Premier's glaring double standards and outright refusal to address the issue with a comprehensive, independent review continues to send the message that anti-Semitism is tolerated. While the Premier delays, Jewish students are now speaking out, and I quote, "We don't feel safe being Jewish on campus anymore," end quote. In the light of these grave concerns, will the Premier finally act and call a fully transparent and independent inquiry into anti-Semitism within his government, caucus, and party?
Government House Leader.
Thank you so much, Honourable Speaker. I think everyone in this place can agree that hate and anti-Semitism has no place in BC. We are committed to continue to work with members of the Jewish community, but all communities across this province, to address racism, to address anti-Semitism. In fact, we've been doing that work for years, Honourable Speaker, whether that's increasing Holocaust-related education in schools, whether that's making sure the prosecuting service has more tools to be able to charge people with hate crimes when they appear. Honourable Speaker, this is a commitment I think we all in this House share, and it's important. We know there's a lot of people feeling real fear in our communities, whether it's folks within the Jewish community, or whether it's because of Islamophobia on the rise, people in the Muslim community. We are committed to continue to make sure that British Columbia is a safe place for everyone, no matter where they come from, no matter what they believe, or no matter who they love.
Kamloops North Thompson, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the minister talks about the Holocaust education changes, and those are started years ago. We are talking about a lack of action by this government on anti-Semitic issues post October 11th, despite the warnings of the member from Coquitlam-Millardville directly to the Premier and this government about the rise. The surge in demand for mental health services by Jewish students is a staggering 50% increase over last year alone. This underscores a crisis under this Premier's watch. Alarming reports reveal that not just students, but university faculty have engaged in anti-Semitic intimidation, revealing a culture of systemic anti-Semitism that this Premier cannot continue to ignore. Now, Mr. Speaker, this next quote from one student is horrific. "My professor stated that the massacre of Jews on October 7th was justified, that the Jews got just what was coming to them," end quote. That's from a professor to a student in the middle of what's supposed to be an educational experience in a safe place for that student. It's not just an abhorrent statement. It's a dangerous statement, Mr. Speaker. How long will the Premier ignore the problem and refuse to call a full independent inquiry, as was done when Indigenous patients were identified as being the subject of racism within the healthcare system?
Government House Leader.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. A statement like that coming from anyone, whether it's a teacher or someone in our communities, is unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. We know that particularly members of the Jewish community, but not only people in the Jewish community, many of us were horrified by the images of what we saw on October 7th. No one wants to see any peoples being targeted and attacked in that way. We know that people in the Jewish community in particular have felt more afraid, more worried since that incident. We're alive to that. I think every member in this House is alive to that. We have to do the work to ensure that people here in British Columbia feel safe, whether it's that incident the member mentioned or any other incident. That's something we're committed to doing, Honourable Speaker. We're committed to working with leaders within the Jewish community, but also other leaders across the province. We highlighted yesterday the Premier met with leaders from the Jewish community on Friday. a very tough conversation, given the fact that people are feeling really afraid. We're going to continue to work with them. But I think it's not only on the Jewish community. It's the responsibility of everyone to work together to ensure British Columbia can remain a safe place for anyone.
Member for Abbotsford West.
Mr. Speaker, what strikes me as incredible is that in the year 2024, we would have to ask these questions. But we have to ask the questions, because despite having information about rising levels of anti-Semitism in high schools, in universities, the Premier didn't do anything. Well, he did one thing. He fired the member of his government who was calling attention to rising levels of anti-Semitism and making demands that something be done about it. And that's why people don't trust the Premier and the government to investigate themselves. I have another student who was attacked verbally in this instance for wearing the Star of David. She says, "I was shouted at, I was called names and intimidated. I'm terrified to be on campus because the university is doing nothing to stop Jews from being targeted." End quote. Mr. Speaker, instead of firing the single voice within his government that was calling attention to this matter, will the Premier do the right thing and commit to a fully independent investigation that examines rising levels of anti-Semitism, not just in society, but within his own government?
Government House Leader.
Thank you so much, Honourable Speaker. Any incident we hear of the type the member shared troubles us all. I think every member in this chamber. But I reject the member's premise that that we've done nothing. Since we formed government, this has been something we've been focused on. Whether it was bringing back a Human Rights Commission, Honourable Speaker, a commission that was gotten rid of, which was there in fact, every province had one. We were the only province that didn't have one. Why was it important on the early days to bring a Human Rights Commission back? Because we needed that independent body to address systemic racism, systemic discrimination in our communities. They've been doing that work, Honourable Speaker. Whether it's, as one of the first roles I had, was to launch an anti-racism strategy. And what I learned through the engagement, many leaders of the Jewish community came forward, many leaders from multiple communities came forward, was that the best way to address it is by strengthening the fabric of our communities. The stronger our communities are, the better we are to sustain and address the challenges, issues we have. That's what we've been committed to do since we formed government. And we're continuing to do that. We're going to continue to do that important work. The Premier had an excellent meeting with leaders from the Jewish community on Friday. We have taken considerable steps to address whether it's expanding education around Holocaust, strengthening the prosecution service. We have a racist helpline, incident helpline, coming online this spring. Honourable Speaker, there's a lot more to do. We're committed to working with all members of this House to make sure that everyone feels safe in British Columbia.
Absolute West, supplemental.
Mr. Speaker, regrettably, the facts tell a very different story. Yesterday, we heard about a handpicked ADM for anti-racism, a former political aide to the Premier, known for her public anti-Semitic rhetoric. She blamed Jews for not getting a job at the UN. It's a handpicked ADM for anti-racism. Karim Haseeb sits on the UBC Senate, but he also serves as a director within the youth wing of the BC NDP, and has a policy role, we're told, for the Minister of Jobs. Two days after the October 7th massacre and rape of innocent people, he took to social media to explain how it was really Israel that was to blame for the atrocities committed just a few days before. We've got an ADM for anti-racism who spouts anti-Semitic rhetoric and negatively stereotypes an entire nation. The members of the UBC, member of the UBC Senate, who occupy leadership roles within the governing party, who blame Israel for the atrocities of October 7th. And the Premier fires the only voice within his government that is calling attention to rising levels of anti-Semitism. Mr. Speaker, does the Premier really believe that in the face of that body of evidence, people trust him to investigate himself, his government, his caucus? Will he do the right thing and call a truly independent investigation into this matter?
Government House Leader.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. I think what British Columbians see in our Premier is someone who's committed to ensuring that we have an equitable society, somebody who's committed, who's passionate in ensuring that everyone feels safe in British Columbia. That's what I think British Columbians see. In fact, I think most British Columbians know that about our Premier. His early days coming out of law school was fighting for the most vulnerable people in this province, Honourable Speaker. That is who he is then. That is who he is today. We're really proud of him as a leader. And he has sat down with leaders from the Jewish community. He sat down with leaders from the Muslim community. He sits down with leaders from Indigenous communities and hears from them the genuine challenges that they're feeling, that they're facing. And his commitment and our commitment is real. We're going to continue to ensure that we find ways to strengthen the fabric of our communities so that we can collectively address the challenges and make sure that British Columbia remains a beacon of hope across the world, the place where people can come, they can believe what they believe, they can love who they love, and feel safe in doing that.
Leader of the Third Party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. In 2021, this government appointed the Technical Advisory Panel to identify at-risk old-growth ecosystems and prioritize areas for deferral. Last week, leaked mapping data revealed that bureaucrats removed 55% of the large-treed old-growth areas from deferral and then substantially increased deferrals in areas with smaller and less commercially valuable trees. It is devastating and yet utterly predictable to learn that the Ministry of Forests did not follow the advice of the scientists this government tasked with identifying the most at-risk old-growth in this province. But most of all, this is a failure of leadership. The rest of the world and future generations are counting on us to save the very little rare old growth that is left in BC. This government made a promise in 2020 to the people of BC to protect old growth. Here we are 4 years later, and that promise is not being kept. My question is to the Premier. Why should anyone believe what this government says when it comes to protecting old growth trees?
Minister of Forests.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's no doubt that people in British Columbia feel a deep affinity for our forests and the ecological systems that support our forests throughout the province. What we committed to in the Old Growth Strategic Review was to take the advice of the Technical Advisory Committee, and indeed 1.2 million hectares were set aside. That being done, then the next step in the process, according to recommendation number one of the Old Growth Strategic Review, was to consult with First Nations. In that process, while some First Nations supported a TAP, Technical Advisory Panel, identified deferrals, others said that based on their expertise, local knowledge, alternative old growth land outside of TAP should be deferred instead. Some First Nations don't support proposed deferrals at all and prefer to continue forest activity within their territory, and we respect that decision. So we will keep taking action alongside of First Nations communities and advocates and the sector to conserve more ancient forests for our children and grandchildren and to support a sustainable approach to forestry.
Leader of the Third Party, supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. It's so fascinating how the government will say it respects the decisions of First Nations, but the nations that have said that they don't want logging of old growth in their territories, those decisions are harder for this government to respect. The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives is accusing the Ministry of Forests of institutional capture. Environmental leaders and former high-ranking civil servants call it a betrayal in the making. After nearly two centuries of industrial logging by timber companies, blaming First Nations for not protecting old-growth forests while offering nothing in this budget for conservation financing is simply terrible. Again, an absolute failure of leadership. Conservation financing is necessary to achieve the paradigm shift that this government committed to. My question is to the Premier. Will he put enough conservation financing on the table so that the last old growth of the province has a chance to stay standing?
Minister of Water and Land.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I was very proud to join with many members of our government with respect to the question of conservation financing and sign a protocol, a tripartite protocol, as my colleagues would know, between ourselves, the federal government, and First Nations here in BC. I believe the largest conservation package in this country's history. More than $1 billion in contributions from the philanthropic sector, from the province and the federal government, to be able to enable the conservation initiatives that my friend talks about. We have the greatest biodiversity of any province in this country. That also means we have the greatest responsibility with respect to the protection of that biodiversity. There's a number of initiatives I could articulate, but on the specific effort of conservation financing, we put forward $150 million. That was matched by $150 million in private money, and this is just the beginning. Our ability to stand up the conservation initiatives that Indigenous leaders are looking for will be enabled by these significant contributions. There's more to come. This is exciting work, and I think it is work that is legacy building for all of us collectively on behalf of the citizens of this province.
Leader of the Fourth Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've heard from police over the last several days of several arrests, several busts dealing with drugs, and through that, clearly, that the NDP's safe supply of drugs are now making into the hands of gangs and drug dealers that are being sold. Mr. Speaker, we're hearing from doctors that safe supply is making its way into our schools. To the Minister of Health, how many students in British Columbia are addicted to the safe supply, and how widespread is this problem?
Minister of Mental Health and Addictions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks to the member for the question. I think everyone in this House agrees that the safety and the mental health of children and youth is of utmost importance to all of us. I do want to really thank the RCMP for the work that they are doing, for the work that frontline law enforcement is doing with respect to the critical work that they're engaged in clearly across the province to do everything to go after predatory drug dealers and drug traffickers to keep drugs off of our streets. With respect to, you know, what we are seeing in terms of children and youth, I think we can take some comfort in what we are hearing from experts that indicate that we are not seeing an increase in opioid use disorder amongst children and youth, notwithstanding that, of course, we did see from the McCreary Adolescent Health Survey other concerns that we are addressing in terms of a rise in concerns around mental health issues for youth that we're investing through significant investments for foundry services, for access to mental health services for children and youth. That's work we'll keep doing with partners and with our health system.
Leader of the Fourth Party, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, there certainly wasn't an answer to the question with regards to how many and how widespread this problem is. So perhaps a different attack or a different approach should be thought about here. To the Minister of Education, clearly your colleague has downplayed just how widespread this problem is. Perhaps can the Minister of Education name one school district in this province that does not have a problem with safe supply being diverted into the schools?
Minister of Mental Health and Addictions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, when it comes to the work that we are doing collaboratively and across government on issues related to child and youth mental health, in fact, we're working very closely across our health system, with our education system, to ensure that children and youth have access to the supports and services that they need. We have a mental health in school strategy that is designed precisely to provide access to children and youth to those supports. We have a number of school districts who operate the Preventure program, which is specifically designed to identify those youth who may be at risk of developing a substance use disorder and intervening to provide those supports. This work is work that we are very much engaged in with school district partners and with experts and in child and youth mental health across our health system.
Opposition House Leader.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. In the Kamloops area, expectant mothers are once again being subjected to the stress and the worry of not being able to access the prenatal care that they need. The First Steps Early Pregnancy Clinic, which sees well over 60 new pregnancies every month, is desperately trying to avoid running out of money since this NDP government has only funded them to March 31st. Now, this NDP-manufactured funding uncertainty is causing extreme stress for mothers like Jordan Jeffries, who is pregnant with her first child and desperate after her plea for obstetrics care was recently declined. She says, and I quote, "I was told that I have to go to Salmon Arm or Vernon, which is crazy to me in the city of our size," end quote. So my question is this: will the Premier remove this funding uncertainty today so that there's no disruption to the critical prenatal services that's desperately needed by hundreds of expectant mothers in Kamloops and surrounding communities?
Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. And of course, the member will note, because we've been working on the issues around maternity care in Kamloops over the last year. The very significant supports and investments have been put in place, both for doctors, for nurses, for midwifery, and we're going to continue to act to support expectant mothers in Kamloops. And Honourable Speaker, the member has raised this issue with us, and we're working hard to ensure that people of Kamloops get the care they deserve. Made very significant investments, the member will know, in increasing doctors and nurses and healthcare services in Kamloops, and we're going to continue to do so.
Opposition House Leader, supplemental.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this funding issue is exactly what happens to a different obstetrics clinic 1 year ago in Kamloops, when the TRFO clinic also faced funding uncertainty that went on for months and months and months. Now, fast forward today, same issue, same minister, same robotic answer. Since the First Steps Early Pregnancy Clinic opened in September of 2023, nearly 400 expectant mothers from Kamloops and the surrounding communities have been able to receive the prenatal care that they need. This is all at risk for hundreds of expectant moms moving forward because the NDP government will not solve this funding issue today. The funding runs out in a little over 2 weeks from today. And I would remind the Minister of Health that in Kamloops, 2 in 5 Kamloopsians do not have a family doctor either. Now, this leaves expectant mothers like Ty Moreau in the lurch. She lives in Vavenby, 2 hours north of Kamloops. She's facing a breech pregnancy. She's being told that her only options are a C-section or traveling down to Vancouver for up to 5 weeks. Ty says, and I quote, "To not have the options and be really forced into a major surgery without having any alternatives is really scary. It really makes you think twice about where you're living and the health care here," end quote. Why is the Premier denying expectant mothers like Ty the prenatal care that she deserves and that she should receive in Kamloops? And will the Premier today solve this funding issue for this critical obstetrics clinic in Kamloops?
Minister of Health.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And what the government has done is take action, as we did last year, as we continue to do, to bring more doctors, to bring more nurse practitioners, to bring more nurses, health sciences professionals, to add services in Kamloops and everywhere else, Honourable Speaker. And that's what we'll continue to do in this case.
Member for Caribou Chilcotin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Caribou Memorial Hospital's often dire circumstances under the NDP has life-or-death consequences for our community. I've written to the minister twice about my now-deceased constituent, Lee Butler, a horror story of severe neglect and deplorable conditions. I've just delivered to the Premier and to the Minister of Health images that his daughter, Sheila, has shared with me of her father left to lie in a hospital bed with his feet and legs hanging over the rails of the bed to avoid laying in his own filth and soiled sheets. Our frontline workers, Mr. Speaker, are overwhelmed. This is not their fault. This lies with the Premier's office. Looking at these photos, how is this in any way acceptable in any hospital in this province? When will the Premier take responsibility for the lack of basic care and dignity inflicted upon Lee Butler and countless others in British Columbia?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. And the member knows that whenever he raises an issue with me, he gets an immediate response, as he will in this case. We have Honourable Speaker, I think what we see around British Columbia is very significant progress in terms of the recruitment of family doctors. Our focus has been on taking action. For example, with respect to emergency rooms, the locum program, of which there's 187 participants now, our Nurse Connect programs around BC, which do the same, which significantly invest in rural BC. You've seen the investments in the last few weeks with respect to rural retention bonuses in communities such as Williams Lake and others. And we're going to continue to take those steps. I've personally, as the member will know, been to Williams Lake, met with doctors and nurses and health sciences professionals and healthcare workers and patients in that community. And we're going to continue to support our outstanding healthcare staff and professionals in Williams Lake.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
The minister missed the point. This patient is deceased. My colleague did reach out, not once, but twice. So for the minister to then discount it by saying that there will be some response, it's too late. It's too late. Hopefully it's not too late for Sarah. She's a mother of four, a wife, and a former business owner. She shared with me her devastating experience with our broken healthcare system, and I quote, "I'm now a mere shell, withering away while our medical system turns a blind eye to the urgency of my situation. I'm literally dying in front of my family's eyes. This is unequivocally wrong, and no one deserves this," end quote. Her inability to access timely and effective medical care is a damning indictment on the failed state of healthcare under this premier and under this minister. How many more patients like Sarah have to suffer before British Columbians get access to the healthcare they need and deserve?
Minister of Health.
Well, Honourable Speaker, the member talks about someone, but the case where someone passed away. I was referring, I think everyone in the House heard me, to the information that the member passed me 2 minutes before question period. So that's what I was referring to, and I think that all members of the House will know that when people provide me with information, I work on the cases all the time, every time, and in every case. Honourable Speaker, I appreciate that in our healthcare system, which serves everyone in BC, which led the world in responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, where we're making unprecedented investments. And some of those investments are improving services with respect to family doctors, with nurse practitioners, to team-based care. We're going to continue, Honourable Speaker, to take action in both every case, when cases are brought to my attention. That consistently happens, Honourable Speaker. I think That's the experience of most members of the House, but also in general, to improve the number of doctors. We've done that by working with doctors. Remove the number of nurses, because we've worked with nurses, Honourable Speaker, and members don't have to worry. There'll be another question. And we're going to continue to make those efforts.
Member for Surrey Whitrock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When his 88-year-old mother-in-law tripped on a curb outside of Dollarama at Westminster Highway and Blanchard Drive this past weekend, Richmond resident Rick Pullen had to wait 2.5 hours for an ambulance to show up. The senior was left sitting in a parking lot with a broken hip. And Rick says, and I quote, "She's sitting on concrete, 88 years old, and freezing cold, and it's starting to rain," end quote. Rick was forced to buy blankets from the dollar store to try and keep his mother dry until an ambulance showed up. Other stories we hear of Michelle Hart, a 77-year-old mother who was transported from Clearwater to Royal Inland Hospital with convulsions. What happened there? She was given a prescription for brain swelling and left with no ride home, no place to stay, and nobody to help her. These stories are becoming all too common across this province. The minister knows this, the premier knows this, the seniors of British Columbia know this, because they are being let down every single day by this minister, this premier, and this government. Does this minister find it acceptable that a senior is on the concrete in Richmond 2.5 hours laying with a broken hip, 2.5 hours to wait for an ambulance? Does the minister accept that, yes or no?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. And clearly, I don't accept it. And BCEHS has responded in this case. But I would say, Honourable Speaker, the member's office wanted to answer the question. Here's the answer. In 2017, when I became Minister of Health, 70% of our ambulance staff across BC, 70%, were casual. We've increased the number of full-time paramedics from 1,500 to 2,500 in 5 years. 1,500 to 2,500. Reduced wait times in critical aspects of care, including responses to purple and red calls, Honourable Speaker. Reduce those wait times in a time when the population of British Columbia has risen by 800,000, Honourable Speaker, and the number of red and purple calls has increased by 25% in those periods. We have transformed, by working with our ambulance paramedics, the ambulance service from a service that was casual and especially inadequate in rural BC, which is a legacy of 16 years of policies, Honourable Speaker, to one Honourable Speaker, where we responded and transformed the service, putting unprecedented investments in it. And yes, Honourable Speaker, every time an issue arises, every time, because as the members know, calls are triaged, and every time an issue arises and it's raised, it is addressed as it has been by BC Emergency Health Services in this case. And we'll continue to invest in our ambulance service, to deal with the inadequate legacy of the previous government in that regard, and continue, Honourable Speaker, to support...
Members...
And to continue to make unprecedented investments, because people in every community in British Columbia deserve an ambulance. When they call an ambulance, they should get one in appropriate time, and that's what we're going to continue to act to do.
The bell and the question period.